Hello guys, I'm gonna read chapter 22. Call from Duncan's War, so here I go. Wallace ordered a piper to arouse the men at first light for the march onward to Lanark. The piper marched through the kirk, stepping over the bodies of slumbering men. The stone walls, timbered ceiling giving extra penetration to jolting melody. Many of the reclining forms groaned and covered their ears. Not all the Scots like piping. And early in the morning, the ranks of those who don't swells, considerably. Duncan thought of ancient Grier as the skirling of the piper startled him back to life. He thought of the sword dancing Grier had taught him. He thought of his mother Fiona and Jenny and Angus. He thought of Dunford Castle and the secret mines. Had the dragoons scoured the countryside? Had they found his family in their hiding place? He thought of Broody. He thought of the English. He wondered if it came down to it, would he confess his faith before the men and be brave under torture? Now then, lad, came a bright voice from the shoemaker, as if resuming the conversation left only moments ago. He held out Duncan a pair of well-oiled leather shoes. I've gone and made these for ye, and I'm hoping they fit ye just so, lad. Duncan was speechless. He slipped his feet into the soft fleece interior and felt the warmth seep into his toes. You'll notice I sewed these wee ridges into the soles, continued Matthew, so as ye can keep your footing while running, and you'll be keeping ye a wee bit warmer. That's most kind indeed of ye, Matthew, said Duncan's father, but I have no money to pay ye. Matthew looked offended. I don't even want your money. They're fine shoes, Matthew stammered, Duncan, and I thank you for them. Well, lad, you'll be needing all the warmth you can find for the days ahead. I feel a cold snap in my joints. Matthew nodded confidently and pressed his face against the stained glass window, maybe snow. The piping stopped, and while the men rose stiffly and began packing their things, Duncan overheard James Wallace's firm voice talking near the front of the kirk with two men. Duncan strained to hear and recognize the voices of Mr. Robertson and Mr. McCormick. He knew that what they would be saying. Soon the other voices joined in discussion. We march onward, men, in defense of the faith. This from Wallace's voice rising above the others firmly. Then I say, came another voice, we be rid of Turner here and now. His wrongs are great enough, and no one doubts. And he cost us in ale and meat at every inn we pass. We, none of us, would have lasted this long under his promise of quarter, added another. True enough, boomed Mr. Crookshank's voice. But we give him a quarter and we act, and if we act unjustly and break our word and bear falsely with that quarter granted, man, why should we expect that God will be our secondary fight on our side if we act unjustly as Turner? Hear, hear, said Nelson. But they started it, warned another voice. God calls us. If war we must wage, to wage that war according to justice and honor, added Mr. Crookshanks. Their dealing falsely with us makes no head wipe the crime out of our behaving falsely with one of them, though he be the devil himself. Aye, but he is, said one, laughed Fielkirk. Turn or live, said Wallace, for now. And I'll brook no abuse of the man. Now up and onward to Lanark, where we shall renew our oaths to God. Monday, November 26, from the steps of Lanark Tollbooth, Mr. John Guthrie preached a stirring sermon to the infantry, while Mr. Gabriel Semple gave a biblical charge to the men of horse. At the conclusion, both ranks gathered, and with arms uplifted, with glad hearts, they with one voice swore their loyalty to the covenant. I do bear my witness to the national covenant of Scotland, the solemn league of the covenant betwixt the three kingdoms. These sacred, solemn, public oaths of God can be loosened or dispersed with by no person or party or power upon earth, but are still binding upon these kingdoms, and will be so forever hereafter. Their voices grew louder, and Duncan felt the water stand in his eyes as he confessed his faith along with fighting men. Jesus Christ is my light and my life, they cried, my righteousness, my strength, and my salvation, and all my desire. Wallace, Captain Peyton, Mr. Crookshanks, Bearscup Nelson, and the others framed the manifesto, formally explaining the origin and goals of the little army, declaring their actions just as in self-defense against their cruel plunder and ill usage by Turner and the others of his ilk. This declaration they sent ahead to Edinburgh in desperate hopes that it might help them seek redress. Then Wallace ordered them to march north to the capital. Only hours later, Commander-in-Chief Dalyell, followed by ranks of well-armed redcoat troops, rode into Lanark. His second-in-command, Drummond, pressed hard after Wallace through the pitiless Gladsmuir Hills. Wallace and his men were forced to march on without rest through the bleak and broken moors. Night fell, and still Drummond came on, his royalist snipers firing their muskets at any stragglers. Then it hit the blackest part of the night. The wind swept down on the exhausted band, driving icy blasts of bone-numbing sleet onto every joint. With their frantic way dipped down the valley in the moor, the sleet turned the to drenching rain. Then they were forced to scramble to the higher waste. It turned to snow. Your shoes don't hurt ye, I trust, said Matthew Patson in Duncan's ear. Duncan looked up in wonder at the grinning face of the good shoemaker. How could ye be so cheerful in this weather, hounded as they were by the Drummond? No, they helped me, replied Duncan, doing his best to return the smile. Ah, and I'm glad of it, said Matthew, glad of it indeed. Duncan thought he heard the shoemaker humming the plaintive song tune, Marchers, above the howling wind and the tramp of weary feet, but he couldn't be sure. The desperate man marched on, drawn to the lodestone rock at Edinburgh. But not all of them remained so fixed. The ranks that had grown to nearly 1,000 now shrank by twos and threes. Some men unwillingly halted, like frail Hugh McHale, too sick and unable to continue. Others vanished because they feared the worst. As the storm raged on, they passed through Bath Yates and Newbridge. Most of men felt wretched in the extreme. Finally, valiant Wallace called a halt in the now snow-covered Colton churchyard. The grim towers of Edinburgh, rising ominously only 4 miles away, making themselves as comfortable as they could in the wet snow, Duncan and his father read from the Bible and prayed. They tried to sleep. Duncan could not stop shivering. What would the morning hold? So that was chapter 22. Bye, guys. See you later. See you later. See you later. See ya. See ya. Later. Bye, guys.